Forget now tonight, those of you who have responded to the invitation during the month of October, you're invited to the home of Brother and Sister Street. And if you need transportation or direction, you may meet on the parking lot outside the old student center and meet there about 7:15. And Brother Street will be there to assist you getting to his house. Great privilege. I hope you're enjoying all the visiting. And how many of you have not been in a home yet? Let me see your hands. That many. How many of you have been in a home? Let me see your hands. Yeah, all right. We're still in the minority, though, but we'll overcome that. Tell you how we can do it tonight. If you boys will just get you a date after church and go get a Coca-Cola. See, we can wipe out that deficit tonight. Play host to one of these ladies. And if you think there's safety in numbers, ask two or three of them, you know. Brother Wes told me this past week, he told me about a freshman boy that was here at Harding trying to get a date. He had just gone until his tongue was hanging out. He couldn't find a date. He'd ask everybody that he thought he had a half a chance with, and he was just so frustrated. So some of the senior girls or the upper class girls said, "Well, don't sweat it. Just relax. What's all the deal? Just relax. Everything's going to be all right." They said, "Haven't you heard that for every boy born, there's a girl for him?" He said, "You can't improve on that." He said, "I'm not trying to improve on it. I'm just trying to get in on it." So get in on it and use these times. And I keep mentioning it, but it's important. Life really is just one long courtship. And it's enjoyable. You learn the art of it, though, during these years when you're in school. If you don't learn it here, it's very difficult to learn. And I want to urge you to give your attention to it. Make sure that those relationships in life that are expected and are appropriate during these years of your school years of your life, make sure that you don't waste that opportunity. Enjoy those things and give attention to it. I think your grade point average will be even better if you do it. It didn't affect mine like that, but it may affect yours. Someone said the other day that the energy crisis may be the very best thing that's happened to America in a long time. They speculated that it might actually bring back the open hearth fire, and it might bring families around the open hearth to keep warm and might bring them together again. I would like to think that that would happen. It's possible. It's very possible. I heard someone say that there were going to be fireplaces probably built in homes, and people would start using the open fire as a means of heating their homes. You know, we live in such a computerized world. We live in this future shock world that we have seen. And in this future shock, computerized world, so many words have lost their meaning. Such words as this word hearth, the hearth or the fireside or the hearth, that's almost an unused word today. Some of you never perhaps had a home where there was a hearth, where the family sat around and warmed one side at a time before they went to bed. And that's an experience that you ought to have. The word, perhaps even table, the family table, that event in every home where the family communes together, it's rapidly becoming something, you know, it's almost impossible to attain. The daily chores that many people experienced and had to take care of every day coming in from school, the feeding of the chickens and the milk of the cows and all the things that went on in rural homes, most of us perhaps never had that experience. The term mother is meaning less and less to more and more people every day. The term father is a term that really has been robbed of its rich meaning, a meaning that perhaps was very prevalent during those periods of our history when the home was the center of our society. But But today, the home is not the center, and it's rapidly being robbed, these terms are, of their meaning for us. And as a result of not really having a rich background out of which to draw as we identify who a father is, because of that lack of background, we find ourselves more or less beggars when it comes to understanding the biblical concept of God as a father. And instead of drawing upon a memory bank that's rich and endowed with rich memories, often the reference to God as a father only elicits very unfavorable and perhaps even memories that would best be left unresurrected. But nevertheless, we find that in the Bible, the concept of God as Father is a very prevalent concept. Actually, however, the concept of God as Father was introduced by Jesus Christ. Now, I say that with realizing that the concept exists in the Old Testament, but I think, by and large, Jesus of Nazareth really introduced the concept of God as Father to the world. This may explain Luke, the second chapter, where he was lost, you know, from his mother and father for that day that they made their journey back to Nazareth. And they came around the next day and had found him. And he was in the temple asking and answering questions and talking to the teachers and the scribes. And they were amazed, and the mother and father were kind of put out with him. And they said, "Why have you done this to us? We were worried about you." And he said, "Well, why were you looking for me? Didn't you know that I must be in my father's house?" But the record says they did not understand what he said to them. And I think the reason why they didn't understand it was because they were unfamiliar with that use of the term father as reference to God. And certainly they were unused to it the way Jesus of Nazareth used it. He used the term father in reference to God in the most beautiful and unique way of any human that's ever lived upon the face of the earth. This concept of God as father differed from the Jewish concept. And as I said a moment ago, it exists in the Old Testament scriptures, but somehow or another it just kind of got lost in the shuffle. Isaiah mentions it. Jeremiah mentions it. Moses in the book of Deuteronomy mentions it. Malachi mentions it in Malachi 2:10. But in almost every one of these references, the reference to God as Father has to do more with his being the one that begat them rather than a continuing relationship to him in an intimate manner. Just simply as the one that begat them, as the potter who made them out of clay. That's the parallel reference in Isaiah, that he was really the father of these people, the potter that made these people out of clay. But as far as a rich, rewarding relationship and the expression of it as being the father of us, we don't find that in the New Testament. It does not occur in the book of Psalms, I think, at all. I looked and I couldn't find a reference where David made reference to God as his father in the book of Psalms. It seems that the Sinai spectacle, you know what I mean by the Sinai spectacle, the Sinai experience? When the Jews were assembled at the foot of Mount Sinai on their way out of Egypt, there God impressed them so with a spectacle of awe and power and a show of force that it almost totally and forever influenced the minds of the Jews and indelibly impressed upon them this concept of God as a terrifying fire, as a terrifying fire, as a terrifying power. For example, it says that whenever the presence of God came down in a visible, tangible form on Mount Sinai, that when the people perceived the thunderings and the lightnings, and they heard the sound of the trumpet, and they saw the smoke upon the mountain, they were terrified, it says, and they stood afar off, trembling, and said, "Moses, you speak to us, and we'll listen, but don't let him speak to us again, lest we die." This was not without design. God knew the nature of these people. He knew what they needed. They needed this show of power. They needed a show of disciplinary force. And Moses said to them, "Well, don't be afraid. God is proving you, and that his fear might be always before your eyes so that you might not sin." And he had a design in showing himself to the Jewish people as this kind of God rather than predominantly a God who was their father in a continuing intimate relationship as we know it today. But I say it was something that was unaccustomed. It was an unusual representation of God, this representation of him as a father. They weren't quite accustomed to it. But not only that, it wasn't the same kind of a concept that the heathen had who lived before the coming of Christ. They didn't look upon God as father either. The Stoics looked upon God as one who was an emotionless someone, as someone who could not be really touched by the feelings of men's problems and concerns. They said, they reasoned like this, if God could be influenced by you and me, just mere men, that would mean that we have more power than God. We have power over God. So they reasoned that God must then be an emotionless person. He doesn't have the emotions that we have. So they pictured him as someone who was really a God of no feeling. Then you come to the philosophy of the Epicureans. They looked upon God as one of perfect serenity, and his atmosphere or his attitude toward the world and his own, the attitude of his own mind was one of perfect and complete serenity. Therefore, they said God couldn't be involved in the affairs of men because his serenity would be interrupted and he would no longer then be this perfectly serene being. So they looked upon God and described him as being a God of detachment. He just really wasn't detached, or he was not attached. He was detached from the human condition. So you have this concept of God, you see, being very different. As being a father, they weren't aware of it. They had no awareness of him being a loving father who oversees them and cares for them. Not only is that true, the present day, if you want to call Voltaire and Robert Ingersoll present day unbelievers or disbelievers, they aren't aware of God as a father either. Voltaire's verdict on life was something like this, whether it was on his deathbed or when, I'm not sure, but he just simply said, it's a bad joke talking about life. It's a bad joke. Bring down the curtain. The farce is done. Can you imagine having a concept and an outlook on life like that? How would you like to get up and look at him across the table in the morning? Wouldn't that be a horrifying experience? If that's his attitude toward life, I sure wouldn't want to live with Voltaire. Robert Ingersoll wasn't any better. The uncertainty, I don't know quite how you would describe this man's attitude toward life. And upon his deathbed, he made this statement, "Oh God, if there be a God, save my soul, if I have a soul, from hell, if there be a hell." What uncertainty. And how unlike the attitude that Jesus had were these two men's attitudes. Jesus, when he was dying upon the cross, lifted his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." What a beautiful way to exit life. These men didn't know anything about that kind of peace. They didn't know anything about that kind of relationship with God. Jesus had something going for him, and he had a concept of God that, it was unusual. The Jews had not had it. The heathen philosophers prior to his coming hadn't had it. Those people who are unbelievers, even from his day until now, they still don't look upon God as their father. And let me say this, it may be that even you here tonight, maybe you don't have that kind of a concept of God for this reason. It may be that in your experience, you don't have anything in your memory bank of experiences with your earthly father by which you can make an attachment and can have some common ground of understanding so that you can understand what's meant when these attributes of God are given. I wonder, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I wonder how many of you have an unpleasant memory of your father. I wonder how many of you, the memory of your father is something that you'd just rather not bring up, really. I suspect that the majority of the people here, and I wouldn't say that, not with a Christian audience, I don't know what percentage of you would be that just simply had a very unpleasant experience with your father. Perhaps your father was one of those who is a detached father. Perhaps he was one that just really couldn't be involved with the family. Perhaps he was one that was always reading the paper and didn't want to be bothered with your problems, or was always looking at a football game and just didn't want to be bothered. Or when he was at home, he was always away from home. When he was away from home, he was always away from home. Maybe he was always detached. Maybe he was always too busy for you. Maybe you just never could really talk to him. Maybe he was a father that never did express emotions. Is that your father or not? Did you ever see him kiss your mother? Did he ever take you in his arms and tell you, "I love you"? Did he ever spank you to show that he cared? Did he ever give you constant and consistent discipline so that you'd know that he really knew where you needed to be going, so that you had confidence in him? Or was he a God, or was he a father that just simply never did express emotions, either to your mother or to you or to your brothers and sisters? He was just kind of a neutral thing that just kind of... What kind of an experience do you have with your father? It may be that he was a drunkard. It may be that he was simply totally abusive. It may be that he had no feelings at all, and the feelings that he did have were feelings of animosity and hatred and bitterness. It may be that that kind is the memory that you have of your father. And I've talked with young people just recently who've told me, and those over the years, of their father being someone who was like a beast, obsessed by passions, irrational because of alcohol, eaten up with hatred, bitterness, and animosity. Well, when you talk to people about the fatherhood of God, people who are like this, who have that kind of a memory, mention the father aspect of it, perhaps it even creates a knot inside your stomach where you just have such a feeling of you don't like to think about your father. Well, if that be the case, perhaps then God can serve as the hitching post to which you can get your emotions straightened around. And I thought about this before the early service. I thought that perhaps this concept of God that's been given to us through Jesus Christ, that very well may be an eternal reminder and an eternal constant thing, you know, that gives us a real impression of what a father ought to really be. So that all people from all walks of life, after Jesus Christ came and showed us the Father, that they can all look to Jesus Christ and see God as the Father and understand what a father really ought to be. Well, when he came showing us the Father, what did he show us? In the book of John, chapter 17 and verse 6, he said to his Father, Father, I have declared or I have manifested thy name unto these men whom you have given to me. In other words, he said, I've told them all about you. And I don't know whether you've ever had this experience, but I've talked about my father. I haven't told everything about him, but I love to tell other people about him. I could tell you things tonight that would just tickle you to death, and they tickle me at least, and they would be interesting to you, I think. One memory I have of my father is of him sitting in a chair. And I've seen him do this 1,000 times, I guess, sitting in a chair with his Bible, reading that Bible and stroking his hair. He's bald-headed, that may be why he was bald, but he's always had that habit of reading his Bible, sitting in a chair, and stroking his forehead. And I'll have that in my memory as long as I live, and I guess throughout eternity. And I would like to tell you a lot of things about my father. Jesus came and told us all about his dad. And he just simply says, I've told them everything about you. Haven't held back anything. I've told them. I have manifested thy name, thy personality, thy character. I've told them about and let these men in on what you're like. What did he tell us he was like? Well, he says he's a God that cares for you. He really and truly genuinely cares for you. Far from being detached, like the Epicurean said. Far from being one who is void of emotions, like the Stoics said. This God, as a father that Jesus Christ tells about, was a God who had many emotions. He had emotions that are kin to our emotions. He had attachment that was kin to our attachment to our children. And all of these things characterized the Father of the Lord Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ came teaching that God is Father. He uses this term 110 times in the Gospel of John alone. 52 of those times, he tells us that 52 of the times he uses in the last night that he was alive, he uses the term Father. He spoke of him as the Father and spoke of him in such a beautiful way to let us know that he had an intimate relationship with him. He called him Abba. In the book of Mark, in chapter 14 and verse 36, Jesus uses the term Abba. And the term Abba is a word that is really translated Father, but it's more than just Father in the sense of begetting or someone having begotten somebody else. The term Abba is the Palestinian child's way of calling upon his father in an intimate way. Now, the little children of Palestine used to call their fathers Abba around the family circle. In the intimate relationship between a father and his children, they would call him Abba. A few years ago, in circulating among the Arabs over in Israel, we found them referring to various people as Abu. This is Abu so-and-so and Abu so-and-so. And I said, what does that mean? And they said, well, this is my father. That's the father of this man, Abu. And they call them Abu. It's the same word. It's the parallel word in the Arab language today. And they still use it. They've been using it like that, I guess, for as long as the language existed. We find Jesus using this term, Abu. The American way of translating Abba, I guess the best translation would be Daddy. People who are overseas, they don't understand our use of the word Daddy. The English-speaking people, their broad English ear, you know. They said, what is this daddy you keep talking about? Daddy. Well, I talk about my daddy. But anyway, they kind of thought it was funny. They'd laugh at us. How many of you call your father daddy? Yeah, how many of you call him Papa? Many of you? Not too many, but some. How many of you just call him Father to his face? Any of you? Not usually. We usually refer to him as Father in the third person. You know, my father did this and that. But when we talk to him, we usually call him Daddy, don't we? That's kind of how Jesus used this expression here. He called him Daddy when he prayed, Father, Abba. Daddy, please, all things are possible with you. Take this cup away from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And he used this very intimate term. As I said, he called him a God who was a Father who cared, one who was genuinely concerned, not detached. In John the 16th chapter, Jesus said, I'm not going to say that I'll pray to God for you, to my Father for you, for he himself loves you because you've loved me and have believed that I've come from the Father. He says he loves you. He's that much attached to you. But not only does he love you, in a verse that I've made familiar to you, I think, in 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, Jesus there said that God cares about you. Cast all your anxieties upon him because he cares about you. Not just cares for you in the sense of taking care of you, but he actually cares about you. In other words, he likes you. Did you ever think about it that God likes you? He likes you. For example, in John the 16th chapter, verse 23, Jesus says that if a man loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come into him and make our home with him. You know, you don't go live with people you don't like. I don't. There's some of my kinfolks I wouldn't like to live with. You think of some of yours you wouldn't like to live with. How would you like to go spend the rest of your life with some of your kinfolks? Not me. Thank you. I'll just take my residence somewhere else. Because I just guess I really don't like them. I try to love them, but I don't know whether I like them or not. I wouldn't want to live with them. But God loves you in such a way, he likes you to the extent that he says, I'm going to come make my home with you. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You're going to be a nice host? You're going to be easy to get along with? Or are you going to kind of get ill at ease? You know, and after about the second or third week, you know, you start looking out to see if it's not going to quit raining, so you leave. Somebody came to stay with a man, and it rained and poured, and the fellow had to stay about 3 weeks. He couldn't leave. Finally, the old fellow got up, you know, and looked out and said, you know, it's brighter in the east than it's been in a long time. He was looking for that cloud to rise, and sure enough, we get tired of people in our homes. I hope you don't get tired of God, but anyway, he likes you enough that he wants to come and live with you. But in some other way, his care is shown. God is a God who's easy to talk to. He's a God that can be entreated. In this reference here in Philippians 4, 6, it says, in nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your request be made known to God. Just tell him about it. When James spoke about him, in James the 3rd chapter in verse 17, James says that God is easy to be entreated. Now, you might not think that's what he's talking about, but he is. In James 3, 17, he's talking about wisdom that's from above, divine wisdom. And he says this divine wisdom is first pure, then it's peaceable, then it's gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good works, without any variableness or insincerity. You know, those are some of the finest characteristics. If you parents are looking for something to latch onto as far as being qualities of a good parent, here they are. James talks about them as being qualities of God's own personality. That he's that kind of a person. He's first pure and then peaceable and easy to be entreated and gentle. He's easy to talk to. Did you ever think about God as being easy to talk to? Well, he is. Talk to him. James says he's easy to be entreated. Notice the extent of his care. I get amazed at his knowledge of us at times. You know, he knew where Simon the Tanner lived. He knew his occupation. He knew where he lived. It was down by the seashore. He knew all about Simon the Tanner. He knew that's where Simon Peter was staying, down in Caesarea. He knew all down in the... Where is he? He was going to Caesarea. Joppa. Send to Joppa and fetch Simon. He's in the home of a man by the name of Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seashore. He knows all that about you. He says your very hairs of your head are all numbered. Every one of us. God has a record in his mind of how many hairs he's put in your head. You know, in Matthew the 10th chapter, Jesus said, do not two sparrows sell for a penny, and not one of them drops to the earth but what God, your Father, knows it? One translation reminds us that he's not talking about falls dead, but simply says that the word falls to the earth literally means not one of them lights on the ground without your Father knowing it. Not a sparrow lights on the ground. In the book of Mark, chapter 12, or it's Luke, chapter 12, rather, Jesus there is recorded by Luke as saying, "Do not five sparrows sell for two pennies?" And Matthew said two sparrows sell for one penny, and Luke says five sparrows sell for two pennies. Well, I wonder what they're referring to. Well, he's referring to these people who were Jews. They were making a sale, and they had five going for two pennies, and we still do it. They did back there. But the point he's making is that in spite of how small these little things are, insignificant, a sparrow selling for a half a penny, he said, not a one of them lights on the ground without your father knowing it. But he said, be of good cheer. You're of much more value than many sparrows. You're worth more than many sparrows. But he talks about the love of God being undeserved, how that God causes the sun to shine upon the evil and the good and sends his rain upon the just and the unjust. Luke then says in Luke 6:35 that God is merciful to those people. He's kind to the unthankful and to the selfish. Luke uses those two very distasteful words, that God is even kind to the unmerciful or and the selfish people. All right, he talks about him then in such terms as to let us know that he's a God that really gives us his love, whether we merit it or not. He tells us that he's a God who would run out and meet a prodigal son who had wasted all of his substance and in riotous living, and had come back home because he didn't have any place else to go. How this God, this father of his, is the kind of person who runs out to meet this young man and says to him, I'm so glad you're home. And he calls to the servants and says, bring the fatted calf and kill it, and bring the garment, and bring the shoes, and bring the ring, and put it on him. We're going to have a feast, and get out the flutes, and come on, let's have a real time. My son is back home. He was dead, and now he's alive again. That's the kind of God he is. He doesn't stand around waiting on people to beg him to be good to him. He'd rather be good just simply because that's his nature. He's a practical and down-to-earth father. He knows that we have need of our daily bread. And he told his disciples, Jesus did, why are you anxious about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink? He said, the nations of the world are anxious about things like that. Your father knows that you have need of these things. Don't worry. Don't be anxious. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. And he said, pressed down, heaped up, running over. They're going to put it into your lap. God will see to it. He's that kind of a practical God. And when he tells us how to pray, you know what he told us to pray for first? Before we pray for forgiveness, and before we pray for having God deliver us from evil, you know what he asked us to pray for before that? He said, pray for bread, your daily physical bread, your house rent and your car payment, your food and your gas bill and all that. Pray that that might be given you. God will see that you don't lack. He's a God that's very practical and down to earth. He's a consistent God. There's no shadow that's cast by turning about this God. James says every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there's no variation, neither shadow that's cast by turning. The Hebrew writer talking about Jesus Christ said that he's the kind of a person that is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Like Father, like Son. There's no shadow cast by God in his turning. He's a consistent God, consistent with himself. His Son is the same way. You can see it in both of them. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. They're both consistent with themselves. But they're also consistent in the fact that they consistently provide what we need. He's a God that punishes in with wrath and with discipline, as well as a God who loves and caresses and rewards. You see, both of these are needed. A lot of times people say, oh, I can't spank little Johnny. I love him too much. Then you don't know what love is. You don't spank little Johnny because you love yourself too much. That's your problem. Little Johnny needs spanking, and God knew that. He knows it today, and he knows we need chastening. And he said, don't be fretful, and don't worry about it when God does chasten you. He chastens those whom he loves. God knows that this is a part of man growing up to be a well-rounded, mature individual, and that God knows this, that not only does man need love in the sense of a reward, and in the sense of a caressing, and in the sense of encouragement in that respect, but he knows also that man needs this thing of saying, you don't need that, and I'm going to punish you, and if you do it again, I'm going to whip you. God knows that we need that, and he's the God that at the same time that he prepared a heaven, he prepared a hell. Now, he didn't prepare hell for you. He prepared it for the devil and his angels, but just as surely as you live like the devil, he's going to let you go there and live with him. That's part of what God has provided. He's a consistent God in that respect. And then there's another way he's consistent, that is his word will be here from now on out. You know, a lot of times the words of parents don't last very long. When you young people get to where you have your children and you establish your home, you're going to find that the most difficult thing in the world is to make sure that you're consistent. It's almost impossible to be consistent with your children. But that's one of the most important things that you can do for them, is to be consistent with them. And when you say something, make it stick. When God says something, He makes it stick. He's a consistent God in that respect. So you find Jesus Christ describing God in all these beautiful ways. He's a God that cares for you. He likes you. He's going to come and make his home with you. He's a God that's easy to talk to. He's a God whose care is so intricate and so meticulous that he actually knows the hairs of your head and how many there are. He's a God who is so careful about you that he provides for your everyday needs. He's a God that's all of these qualities we talk about as being real qualities of God that a father should have. God has all of these. And we see what a real father is by looking at God. How would you like to have a father like that? How would you like as a little boy or a little girl, how would you like, if you didn't have one, how would you like to have had a father like that? I would like that. I had a father with many of these qualities. He wasn't perfect, neither was your father. But when you think about a father, can you think about things in your father's life that make you love him? We were out fishing one day, my father and I were, and he was at one end of the boat and I was at the other. We were down under a limb up against the bank and we were fishing for bass. I threw my sidearm and that big old plug caught him right in the ear. All he just said was, He never said a word. He never got ill with me. He just kind of grunted when we worked the rest of the hour trying to cut that thing out of his ear. You know, things like that make me love him. He could have just literally torn me up, but he didn't. Well, anyway, these things about God make us love him. You know, there's not a thing about God that I've ever learned that I didn't love. Nothing. I'm not afraid of God. Have you approached the time or have you come to the place where you're not afraid of him anymore? He's my father and I love him. Everything about him I love. And he says, you can be my son and I'll be your father. In fact, he said, I'll let you call me Abba. In the Roman letter chapter 8, Paul says that we haven't been given a spirit of slavery back into fear, but a spirit of sonship whereby we cry, Abba, Father. And then over in Galatians 4, he says the same thing. Since you're sons, God has sent the spirit of his son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Then in Galatians 3, 26 and 27, he tells you actually how you become a son of God. He says, we're all sons of God by faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. And putting on Christ makes you one of the sons of God. God's no respecter of persons. He let God, Christ call him Abba. He lets me call him Abba, Daddy, Father. He lets me call him these intimate terms. He lets you call him the same thing if you're his child. So simple and so easy and so beautiful. Would you like to go home tonight not to lay your head down on a pillow in fear and in frustration and in alienation from a God that you don't know and that's detached from you? Wouldn't you like to have this God come and live with you in your heart and say to you, you're my son, I'm going to be your God, I'll be your father, and we'll go through life now and I'll give you a successful life here and I'll take care of you. Then I want you to live with me. I'm going to live with you now. Then I want you to live with me forever. And we'll work on that. Wouldn't you like that? If you'd like to come tonight and confess your faith and become a child of God, call upon God as your Father for the rest of your life, what a wonderful experience that'll be. And we offer you that opportunity while we stand and sing. Oh,